And welcome to Let's Talk Talking. I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Sherry.
And for those of you who know us and have been following our podcast series and our blogs, you'll know that there's probably no end to the ideas that we have about solutions for children with communication delays and disorders.
Yes, that's true, because when we left the minister's office, the Minister of Education's office, we definitely had an extra surge of excitement, and he basically gave us the impression that there'd be a possibility that any pilot project submissions to help address the concerns of children with learning or behavioral struggles would really be considered. So, of course, we were really motivated by that meeting with him, for sure. So, as everybody knows, our perspective has been on the intensive interventions that are really missing in the current educational model in Saskatchewan. We've got all this consultating going on, and then when we looked more clearly at preschool services, which Cheryl and I, neither of us had been really involved in that for the last few years, we were really amazed at the limited access to services that children had for therapeutic services. And so we were really interested then in that early intervention and what could be done to address the delays and disorders at that level. And so we decided then, in designing the pilot projects that we had, that we should consider these things. We thought that the pilots needed to be reasonable and achievable. Like, we weren't going to go pie in the sky and say we need, 100 more speech paths or we need 100 more OTs, and knowing that that's just not possible anyway, although it's part of the solution. And then we would need the pilots to be goal-oriented and to demonstrate positive outcomes. And if you've been following us from the get-go, you know that if you're not going to have any outcomes and you're not going to measure outcomes, really, then how do you know if anything's working and if your money is being put where it should be put? And so that, for us, just has to be a critical part of the pilots. And then it needs to reflect best practice. So we're not going to be mediocre about anything or just hope that it could be, we could just do this little bit better. No, you need to get to that standard where you want it to be. This is best practice, and not be apologetic that it needs to be at that level.
And to that end, it needs to be standardized. So if we are going to adopt best practice, and we most definitely are, or would, given the chance, it needs to be standardized across the province with the goal of equity. And that's hard in a province this size and the diversity between urban and rural. And it's hard, but I think we can do it, because there are just some basic standardized skill sets that we need to have in place, and procedures, programming, and so on can be standardized. And we'd like to build capacity in paraprofessionals. So using assistants, OT assistants, SLP assistants, with appropriate training and supervision, that ongoing supervision, and then being collaborative and transparent and educational.
Right. And so the pilots, we also thought, needed to include ongoing communication to the ministry leadership, the school divisions, the boards, and the ministry themselves. Because again, with these pilots, you are trying to, in its own way, you're trying to market that this is a really good investment for your money, and that school divisions themselves see the value of putting money into what we're proposing, and that they get something out of it. If there's nothing in it for them and they don't see the outcomes, they won't continue, and they won't continue to expand. It'll be a pilot, and that's where it will end. So we think the pilot should be focused on early intervention, and then the idea would be that would just keep expanding year by year. So in the second year, those services potentially could move from pre-kindergarten then up to kindergarten, then to grade one, and then to grade two. And maybe, Cheryl, you could talk about the next one.
Well, we want to incorporate that multi-tiered system of support. So we want to have the supports in place that are really not in place right now for those children with complex needs in the pre-Ks, their needs are not being addressed, and they need to be if we want to move them further and have them be less complex as they move along. And so really looking at that tier 3 intensive supports, and then also looking at the tier 2 group, which they're in our pre-Ks because so many of the kids are at risk. There are many in that group in the pre-K classrooms, and then also for the handful of tier 1 kids that we would have in a class, there needs to be something that's relevant for them as well. We also want to ensure job satisfaction for participants. We've talked about this in relation to speech-language pathologists in the province in the past, that perhaps one of the reasons that we have so few in the school divisions, or particularly in health, there's a number of reasons, but is the lack of satisfaction. They're going into private practice because they don't want to drive 15 hours a week and see 150 kids and not have any outcomes with any of them. So having that job satisfaction for the speech language pathologist, for the OT, for the assistants that are working there, but also for the teacher and the EA who is in a pre-K classroom, because we feel like if we have clearly defined objectives and we can show the teachers what they're achieving with the students, they'll have more job satisfaction as well. And then be really vigilant with regard to expenditures and funding. So making sure that every expense is a necessary expense and that it is directly going to impact students and not just for a fun thing because this might be a fun idea. It's part of the program. It's necessary.
Yes. And so with those guidelines in mind, so we initially began just with one pilot, and it focused basically on partnering with the existing pre-Ks in Saskatchewan, which are the ones that are currently supported by the Ministry of Education. There's 316 of them in the province. And that is the submission we gave to the minister initially. And then we met with him, and he had had an opportunity to look at it and have at least a little bit of an exposure to it before we got there. And so following our meeting then with the minister, he did, you know, suggest that we go ahead and elaborate on some of the other pilots that we thought might be a possibility. And he said, for sure, you know, let me know what they are. And so we did develop 4 other pilot projects, so 5 altogether. And the following ones were, 3 were still on the early learners, and they were really following the multi-tiered system of support. So again, looking at, we were initially had talked about, you know, partnering with the preschools and looking at tier 3, the intensive needs, but then we developed one for tier 2 and then one for tier 1 level concerns. And then the last one was hearing. So rather than looking at hearing just for early learners, we did expand that and were able to collaborate with a couple audiologists and their ideas about it, but really proposing an educational audiologist and to support hearing impaired children in the province. Hearing for sure is just such a huge, huge dynamic that if it was managed well and if intervention was provided early and well and with best practice, it could have huge outcomes, we believe, for assisting children in developing the way they should be with regards to speech and language and, you know, even social skills. So I'm going to speak about the first one with just a little bit more highlighting. The first one is targeted interventions, a targeted intensive interventions pilot project for preschools with early learning intensive supports program. So some of you may know what that is. It's called ELIS, Early Learning Intensive Supports. And it is a collaborative funding agreement between the federal government and the provincial government, which allows children with intensive needs to attend preschool programs. And so in the case that we presented, we thought that those children would be the first target to getting really great therapy and interventions in the pre-kindergarten programs that the province was running. And so each pre-kindergarten program has 300, there are 316 of them, and they each allow 16 children to attend. And the ELIS funding allows 2 to 3 more children to attend. So those were the children that we thought should be receiving the most attention at the beginning. So that meant then partnering with those pre-kindergarten programs. And we also included that those pre-kindergarten programs would receive universal screening in all developmental areas. We're proposing not only communication, but, you know, the screenings that the occupational therapists might do, or even nursing might be a possibility that they would want to do some screening for those children, those 3 and 4 year olds, and potentially psychologists or any other group that were looking to ensure children were developing the way they should. And then also it would include the training of paraprofessionals by the speech and language pathologist or the occupational therapist, or even, you know, the student services teacher in that school, if there were other areas that were more academic, that they were thinking that children needed assistance with, other learning issues, or maybe other social issues, that there might be other adjunctive paraprofessionals who would be included. But the idea would be that there would be, in each preschool, there's one professional and one educational assistant. And we would suggest that it include full-time speech pathologist and full-time speech and language assistant. And then according to, you know, the availability and the need, you know, maybe a half-time occupational therapist and whatever paraprofessionals they might need to support the programming they would put in place for children. It's very hard to define those really early because you don't know the profile of what the children are, right? What are those tier 3 needs for the children entering? We considered that probably a lot of them would have the diagnosis of autism and, you know, other maybe cognitive delays, speech and language delays, but with severity. And so that would be the initial pilot project that we proposed to the minister. Cheryl, can you think of anything else that was...
No, I think you covered it quite well. But I think for the speech language pathologists that are out there listening, that intensive tier 3 therapeutic programming for in those early years, I think will be a really high interest area.
Where no therapeutic services exist for those children. And in fact, if they join to be in the at-risk pre-Ks and they get one of those 2 or 3 slots that's allowed, they must give up their access to any other programming. So if they had access to a public health speech pathologist, they just have to give up those services. So then there's nothing. So we're thinking you are letting a child have access to preschool experience, but it ends there. And we are saying, no, this needs to be the therapy that they have. And I did miss one thought. We proposed that the programs are all half-time at this point, and that in the ones in the pilot projects, they make those full-time and see, again, then they would have data showing what the outcome was. Because we do believe that if a child is only going 2 days a week, you will not show the outcomes than that they should have if they had more intensive therapy and more frequent therapy.
And one of the next ones is near and dear to my heart. It's the provincial standardized universal screening. And with this pilot, we'd like to look at all of the developmental skills, not just speech and language, because everything is going to impact a child's complexity in the class. And the earlier we can address this, the better. So we're going to have a multidisciplinary team that comes up with a standardized screening, and it would be standardized across divisions so that we can look at provincial data and that we can make goals for the province and see how we're doing. And then the rollout would be starting with the pre-kindergartens, the 3 and 4 year olds, and specifically maybe in the pilot project, and then the preschools in the communities, and then voluntary clinic for 3 year olds in the communities, kindergartens, and then grade 1 and 2 students who haven't previously been screened. Certainly, I've worked in schools with screening and without screening, and I always found it much better, much easier, much quicker to have the screening than not.
And I think if you look at it from a provincial standpoint, from an educational system, if you knew from the get-go that you have so many children with hearing impairment, so many children with fine motor concerns, so many children with developmental language disorder, DLD, so many children with speech sounds and issues. And so if you actually look at it, this is the huge big needs assessment. It's not just we have a lot of complexities and we're trying to deal with them. No, you would know exactly what the complexities are, and you'd know what resources you would need potentially to address them. That you have so many children with autism or behavioral concerns or any of those things, that we're not sort of guessing 5 years down the line why we have so many children or where they all came from or what's happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is where we're at now. Year to year, if you knew every year what those needs were, and you had a document in each child's folder that says they've been screened for these things, and you don't have to go back and go, well, did they have their hearing screened? Or, you know, it would all be there year after year and standardized.
Right. So speaking of hearing screening, do you want to talk about that, Cher?
The next program that we proposed was a provincial hearing support pilot program that included not only hearing screening for children starting at pre-K, grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, and then 5, 7, 9, 11, kind of following the American guidelines, but that it would also include support for any student that was identified. It's okay to screen all these children, but the bigger problem is trying to get them intervention and services. So especially looking in the early years to managing otitis media and chronic otitis media that causes so much difficulty in having children, you know, get a really clear signal to their brain. And so they have, a lot of these children have this gray mapping, and then they have trouble with their speech sounds, and they have trouble with phonological awareness, and even encoding vocabulary. I don't know whether I heard Pat's or past or pack or so I can't really put a nice firm label in my brain for vocabulary. So it just has so many ramifications all the way up. If we could address all those children that have that treatable hearing problem, but of course that does require more collaboration with health services and getting children access to getting their antibiotics from a physician or getting an appointment, and with audiology, of course. And so the person that we would suggest, that it would be the best to have an educational audiologist oversee what those standards should be in the province in education. It might be have to be on a limited basis to begin with, choosing a certain school division or certain schools, or depending on where the availability of the services are, might have to be more urban than rural to begin with. But it would be potentially handling also children's amplification concerns. And again, much more education with regards to assessment for those children and following them. A hearing impaired child should have an annual speech and language assessment. They shouldn't go year after year. You're just guessing whether they actually are developing language according to the typically developing child or not. Almost all of them have potential to do that, but we're not supporting them well enough. So that would be, it was just a little bit beyond then the early years, and definitely beyond screening. We want to, it's a bigger pilot than that. So can you think of anything else with regards to that one, Cheryl, that I've missed out?
No, that's good. I think you covered that one pretty thoroughly. I'll get you to talk about the Tier 2
Yes.
pilot. Yeah.
So that pilot project, our submission was that we would also, when we got talking about, well, if we use up all our resources in that first pilot project, and this was, we were talking to one of the student services teachers who was collaborating with us, and she did remind us, you know, if you choose that as your target group, the children who are Tier 3 and have the most concerns and most complex needs, and they're probably the children who will have a pervasive disorder that won't show the progress that focusing your funds and your pilot interventions in tier two could have. There'd be a lot more outcome if we would focus on tier two. And so then we got thinking, you know, that is absolutely true. It's sort of bang for your buck, right? So then we developed a pilot program suggestion that focused on finding the children who were yellow and who fell into the 12 to 16 week kind of interventions, small group or individual, that you actually would change the status of the child and probably pull them close to the norm or to the norm in just giving them intense of work. And so then we did develop a pilot that said this would be in addition or instead of the other pilots, right? So give another option to the boards or the school divisions to consider. Would you, if you didn't want to consider the pre-K red, would you consider a pre-K yellow program? So yeah,
I would really encourage the boards to adopt both the tier three and the tier two. And I think it's doable if you had a full-time speech pathologist and a full-time educational assistant. Yeah.
And again, the potential is, though, I think even with that, if you may need even more staffing than that, right? You might need, it would all depend on the profile of that pre-K.
Right.
Yeah, if you've got enough children that are red, that are kind of using up the bulk of that first speech path's time, then another speech path might need to be considered for the yellow. And the other part of that would be, again, just that it would be absolutely outcome driven. So, you know, you need that data showing. We benchmarked these programs. We did a program on vocabulary building. We did one on phonological awareness. We did one on narratives. And these are our pre and post scores. And we would, I'm sure, show some development in those little people. Then the last one there, Cheryl, is then the fifth pilot project, which was the tier one, the universal.
Yeah, so we'd like to take another look at the curriculum for the early year learners in Saskatchewan and see if we can get it to be a little bit more developmental and a little bit more what our at-risk kids who are coming in would need. I think the program that exists now that is child-centered, play-centered, and child-led would be really a really, really good approach if you had kids who were achieving already at a high level. They have all their language and all their skills in place, and all they have to do is learn the other skills that you can learn in an academic setting. But for the children that we have coming in, they're already at risk. So we know, for example, in the language area that they have maybe a tenth of the language that their typical peers would have. So in order to learn language, again, I'm just sticking with language, but probably an OT could expand on this as well. In order to learn language, you need to hear it. You need to hear it a lot. You need to hear the words multiple times. You need to hear the words used in multiple contexts. You have to hear the grammar patterns over and over again. You have to know how to listen. Some of our kids don't know how to listen. I've been in pre-K classes where children have sat down for story time and they've been facing away from the teacher. So they're not even facing the teacher who has the book. So children need to learn to do a whole bunch of things in those early years, and we need to teach them. We need to give them opportunities to hear the language, to interact with the language, to use the language, and not to be worried about learning something else with the language, although we hope that they would. So just looking at sort of those best practices for our at-risk kids and using a more developmental approach, I guess.
Yes, and I just think the comparison between going half-time and having one and a half staff, or sorry, you have two staff, you have a full-time teacher and you have a full-time educational assistant, but you potentially have 19 children and they're going two days a week. And so then you have another group 2 days a week, those same two staff. So in total, those staff have potentially 38 children, and that's just loading them up from the beginning, and they're at risk, and or else they're intensive needs. So you're bringing those children all together, so they can't possibly provide those intensive interactions that we want. We need a much higher staff to child ratio so that each child gets a lot of languaging, because you've brought just the at-risk kids together. You don't have those typical learners who are going to model. So you really need more interactions and the languaging for them. So yeah, right. That would be the ideal anyway, right?
Yes, exactly. So that's kind of the long and short of our five pilot project ideas, and we would hope that a school division would adopt all of them, but we don't know. We're going to present them and see what comes. Right, Cher?
Yes, and again, for those of you who are out there who will listen to this and you have any suggestions or ideas, or you don't agree, or you wish we'd said something, or we still have opportunity and we really would love your feedback on it. We know we don't represent all of you and we're just, a couple of cogs in the wheel. And so please join us and give us your ideas. We'd love to even have the chat and know what you're thinking.
So, for Let's Talk Talking, I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Sherry.
Let's talk.